Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus King coming to you live on this Memorial Day weekend from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour and a half, we will be discussing last night's, well, should I say yesterday afternoon's, Night of Champions, 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, and of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. First and foremost, happy Memorial Day to everyone, especially to our current veterans, and of course, remembering those who sacrificed ultimately for our freedom so we can be here on the radio talking to you about professional wrestling. So, hey, God bless America, right? And God bless our vets. Anyway, WWE typically does this. I don't know why I should be surprised. Almost every time we have a premium live event, we have sensational action and really bizarre booking. Really bizarre. And I guess it's just the way it's going to be. So I think this is the new norm, folks. I guess there's really no point in just belaboring it and bitching about it because it's the new norm. We started off the Night of Champions with AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins, which quite frankly surprised me. Even with what came later, I still think you have to make this title important enough to be more important than the tag team title. It's as simple as that. It just goes right down to that. I know the Bloodline storyline is more important. I know something big happened there that we'll be discussing. I know all that. I don't care. You've just introduced this title. It is a solo title. It is extraordinarily important because fans are already calling it a consolation prize championship. It is extraordinarily important that you make this appear to be important, and you did not do it. Congratulations. Now, AJ Styles and Seth Rollins, I didn't expect anything less than a great match, and I got a great match. Seth Rollins still has the habit of, I can't move my leg, and then does a move that requires him to move the leg. He still does that, and he's always going to do that because that's just the way he was trained. That's just the way people are being trained now. It's not going to stop. He'll be reminded later, and he'll be like, oh, yeah, I hurt my leg again, but Not enough to do a springboard, not enough to do a enziguri kick. Okay, you know, that's fine. It didn't take away that much the enjoyment of the match. Number one thing I should say is this crowd in Saudi Arabia, you can think what you want of the government of Saudi Arabia, and I could go on for the whole hour and a half about what I think of the government of Saudi Arabia. But the people are not the government. And these people were fantastic, absolutely fantastic, all night long, for the most part. There was a lull we'll get to, but all night long they were pretty much solid, and they were behind this match. They didn't even know who to root for. Half of them were rooting for AJ, half of them rooting for Seth, and then they sort of went over to Seth's side after a little while. AJ did a fantastic job, as he always does. Seth Rollins did an excellent job, as he always does. The problem was, A, it didn't feel like it's an important title. B, we already knew who was going to win because AJ Styles is on SmackDown. I don't know why you did that. It's so frustrating to watch the WWE do something like that. Do you know how important this match would have been If it were two Raw stars, then we weren't sure who was really going to have that title at the end of the night, and it was the main event despite the fact that Roman Reigns was on the card, that would have sent a very clear signal to the fans, yes, this belt, this title is important. Didn't happen. Fortunately, you picked two guys who could have a good match with just about anyone, and with each other can have a much better than a good match. They can have an excellent match, and that's exactly what they did. AJ Styles is a complete professional, and Seth Rollins is a complete professional, and they had a sensational match that was extremely entertaining to watch, even though it was extraordinarily predictable. And even though at the end of the day, Triple H can get in there and give the belt to whoever it happens to be, it does not feel like an important title. So we'll start out with that, Mike. Great match, but I think it was misplaced on the card, and I think they did the title dirty.
You know, I want to start out with the crowd. Now, there's this one of my favorite stand-up comedians. There's this guy named Gabriel Iglesias, all right? And he went to Saudi Arabia a few years back, and when he got there, he didn't know what to expect because he didn't know how they were going to, you know, how they were going to react to his comedy and stuff like that. He didn't know if they were able to see him. Turns out that he went there and found out he was the number two stand-up comedian in Saudi Arabia. And from what he understood, from what he said, the people got the comedy that he was putting forth. That's what I was thinking here. The people understand what's now. They may only see him once or twice a year, but they understand what the WWE is putting forward, and this crowd was hot. This crowd was very hot. Yeah, there was a lull here and there, but this crowd was hot. And like you said, these two guys, this was a, 25-minute match, a 20-minute match or whatever it was. You probably could have stretched that thing into a 40-minute match, and it would have been fine with me because those two guys are total professionals, and those two guys know what they're doing, and those two guys are damn cardio monsters. I mean,
there's no question. I mean, neither one of those guys were running out of gas. Neither one of those guys were close to running out of gas. If you look at the end of the match, neither one of them were even particularly breathing heavy. That's because they're experts at pacing themselves. They are cardio monsters, like you said. AJ Styles may be in his 40s. He's not slowing down. I don't see any difference. I watch old AJ Styles matches. I watch new AJ Styles matches. I don't see the difference. Hasn't slowed down a step. Now, Derek in the chat room saying, well, Roman's contract, you know, first or last. Yeah, but why not first? You clearly know that there's a singles title on the line in this pay-per-view. You clearly know that you're going for a belt or tag team belts that you're not winning. So why not be first? That's the spot for you. Be first. Get the crowd all hyped up. Nothing major really happened. I mean, you didn't win, and yes, there was a turn that we'll talk about, but it wasn't dramatic, really. It wasn't that dramatic. You saw it coming. Wasn't like it was the total end of the story. It was just one more chapter of the story. If both the Usos had went to wailing on everyone, I would have said, okay, I get it. But that's not what happened. So I don't think that part was so dramatic it deserved last. I just don't. I don't care what Roman Reigns' contract says. I mean, if you go to him and say, look, if you don't want to be first, which we're going to put you first, we're going to put you next to last. If you're not, if you don't accept that, then you're going to go on first. Because this belt, we need to make this title feel important. If you can't understand that, I don't know. I mean, that's just basic common sense. First ever person to hold it, too, because they're not making this a throwback to the Bruno Sammartino thing or whatever. If you look, it says Seth Rollins is the first person to hold it. So this is the inaugural person to hold this belt. That's a big deal. Apparently not big enough to, usurp the tag team championship, which did not change hands. It's a bad move by the WWE, in my opinion, Tom. I'm surprised they did it.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you that the fans were super hot. WWE always puts on a phenomenal show when they're in Saudi Arabia, and the fans are always good. Here's my problem, that not with the actual match, but with the what was at stake in the match. If you already, and WWE has to know that the fans are calling this a consolation prize. If you wanted to kind of like hush the naysayers about the quote unquote consolation prize, then you certainly didn't solidify anything by putting it first. If that belt is supposed to mean something, if that is, you know, going to be defended, you know, by a champion on Raw and exclusive and, you know, print, adjective here, then.
And it's the inaugural one, you know, again, they did no favors to the championship. They knew, like you said, that it was being considered a consolation prize. And I said, okay, it is a consolation prize. I really think this should have closed the show, Taj.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that match last night with AJ Styles and Seth Rollins for that championship, that should have been a main event, be the last match of the night, the main event match. And like you said, it just like you said, it's like a secondary belt, like a mid-card.
Yeah, I really do think it should have been for a couple of reasons. For a couple of reasons, not just that it was that title, but I mean, Sami Zayn coming out in the Muslim gear and getting cheered like that would have been a real great start. It would have been a feel-good start, but oh, whatever. Leave it to the WWE to undermine their own title. We then get Becky Lynch versus Trish Stratus. So I want to say this. I was on Trish Stratus. I said she looks slow. She looks unsure of herself. She looks extraordinarily ring rusty, and she just doesn't look like she has it anymore. Well, I was right about one of the things. She must have been ring rusty, because last night she looked fantastic. Last night she looked like the old Trish Stratus, and that's not all just Becky Lynch making her look good. She obviously was in good cardio. She hit all of her moves. She hit her timing, her pacing, her ring placement. Everything was spot on. Spot on. And it really felt like I turned back the clock to the old Trish Stratus versus Becky Lynch, which was really cool. Now, this is a match that I had said should have been Lita and Trish Stratus, but hey, if Trish can pull this off, this type of wrestling match off, then hey, she does belong. She's better now. She's better now than some of the people who are 15 years younger than her are, if that's the kind of quality match she can put on. So she did a fantastic job last night, no question about that. So a lot of it had to be ring rust and just, you know, not used to whatever, or she trained like a SOB for this, because she looked great. So did Becky Lynch, looked fantastic. Not really sure what the interference was all about. Is this going to be a managerial thing for Trish Stratus, or I don't know where this is leading. But I'm okay with it if that's where it's leading. I think that's probably a pretty good idea, actually. If you're going to bring Trish Stratus back in a more permanent role, she probably isn't somebody who wants to get in the ring every week at her age. So, yeah, if she wants to manage and occasionally wrestle, I could see that being something good, for sure. Becky Lynch got her nose busted open, however. I'm not sure if everybody's seen that. But, yeah, I give this high marks. I thought there was nothing wrong with this match, and truthfully, I think this is one of Trish Stratus' best matches. Certainly the best thing she's done since her first run in WWE.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, her cardio was there. I mean, and here's the deal. Becky Lynch, you look at Becky Lynch, and she looks like she's a little bit bigger in this match. Now, granted, you know, Trish Stratus isn't, you know, Charlotte Flair, but again, from where Becky Lynch had been before, she looked a little bit bigger, all right? And those two girls, again, I'll say it again, much like the Seth Rollins match, I think you could have stretched another 5 to 10 minutes out of both of these girls if you wanted to. That's how good a shape I think both of these two girls are in. And this is what's Trish is in her mid-40s. You know?
I think so. And here's something totally unrelated, and I don't want to make it about appearance because it's not about appearance. But last night, before when Trish Stratus came back, I said, well, I mean, it looks like she might have had, a little bit of work done facially. Last night, as I'm looking at her, I'm saying, I don't know. Maybe not. And she's sitting there. I'm watching the close-up of her face, and I'm saying, she doesn't look any older than Becky Lynch. Really amazing. Really amazing. She potentially, if she has it in her or if she has the desire to, could probably have one more run. I mean, it's a solid run. I was very impressed with her last night. I was wrong when I thought the best days were behind her. I guess she was just extraordinarily ring rusty. And to her credit, she must have been busting her ass to get back into that kind of ring conditioning so that she could do what she did last night, because there was no flubs. There was no being slow. There was no being unsure. There was no tentativeness or wearing out, out of gas, none of that stuff. She looked fantastic, Tom. Looked like the old Trish Stratus.
Agree 100%. This may be one of my favorite matches of the night, considering Trish looked fantastic. Becky Lynch looked great too. They did really work hard. And I'm going to agree with you where I officially said, Trish looked like she had some work done, obviously, but Saudi Arabia doesn't really let you wear too much makeup. And, she was wearing a little bit, I suppose, but not as much as she usually does. And she looked pretty, she didn't look any older than Becky Lynch. And the interference part, I'll get to the end here. Zoe starts interfering. I get it because she's trying to make a mark, but she needs a mouthpiece because her mic skills are not good at all and haven't been so far on Raw. And who better than Trish Stratus to be the mouthpiece? If she's not going to wrestle full-time or at least part-time, then a mouthpiece for Zoe will bring her up.
Yeah, that would be my guess, is that's what they're going to do, because there has to be some connection. She can't just say, oh, well, Trish Stratus hired me to be under the ring for one night. That's dumb. There has to be a connection. So my assumption is she's taking her under her wing. That could be interesting. We don't really have anything like that in the women's division. We have teams and we have, little cliques, but not really manager type thing. Last time we tried that, it was with what's her name and Piper Niven, and that really did not work out. So maybe this will work. Trish Stratus has been around a long time. If Trish Stratus truly wants to be a part of wrestling, but says, I don't intend to climb in the ring every week, then this is the role for her. There's no question about it. She looks fantastic. She's great on the mic. The camera loves her. She's good at what she does, and it will be a huge boom for Zoe Stark. Huge. So, yeah, I agree with you. Todd, I thought this was an excellent match.
You're absolutely right there, like you said about Trish Stratus and everything, and it looks like she was drinking. By the way, when she came out last night, she was drinking from the Fountain of Youth. Reminds me of her from the Attitude Era of Trish Stratus, and not even one rusty thing in that match.
No, I was really, really, really impressed with her. Really impressed. And again, if she can do that now, I don't see any reason she might not want to take the chance to be in the ring a lot, but once every month or two, maybe she'll do a match or that'll be fine. Anyway, we get to Gunther versus Mustafa Ali. This gets a little frustrating. I know everybody loved this match and I love this match too, but we have a little bit of a problem, and that is, number one, we all knew Ali wasn't winning. We all knew that. That's a moot point. Even the announcer said he has no shot. The issue is, if you have Drew McIntyre and Sheamus and everybody else who has tried to dethrone Gunther not come even really all that close, you can't have Ali almost do it. See what they did with Rhea Ripley and Natty? Did you see that? We'll get to that in a minute. That's what should have happened. Because the story you told is, well, okay, when push comes to shove, Gunther isn't really that good against people who are quicker than him and a little more and can wear him out. You don't want to tell that story. The story I believe you're trying to tell is that Gunther is just better than most people. He's just dominant. Well, if you can't dominate Ali, then you should not be able to dominate Sheamus, and you should not be able to dominate Drew McIntyre, and you should not be able to dominate Xavier Woods, and you should not be able to dominate any of those people. That would be like Brock Lesnar saying, well, I broke the Undertaker streak, and I've beat this person and that person, but Xavier Woods almost beat me six times. You wouldn't buy that, right? You'd say, well, wait a minute. How does that work? I think they let Ali, this was where Ali had to take one for the team. This is where, in my opinion, and I know he's like, you know, oh, this is like a hometown favorite or whatever. This is where you get all the heat for Gunther. Ali should have been carried out of that ring on a stretcher. With Gunther repeatedly picking him up after a two count, toying with him, yelling at the audience, laughing at his inability to do anything. So people say, F this guy. Can we put somebody in the ring with him that can get the job done, please? That's what you want. What you got is a lower mid-carder damn near beat you. And I don't see why you're trying to tell that story. You weren't trying to tell that story a month ago. So why are you trying to tell the story now? So while it was a good match, Mike, the booking made me scratch my head a bit.
Yeah, this was one of the few mistakes in this thing, and you're right. This should have been basically a walkover for he's gonna maybe he gets a couple of minutes of offense on Gunther, maybe. But after that, Gunther dominates and he's sitting there pulling him up time after time after time after time, you know, chopping him over and over and over again. That shotgun drop kick, the power bomb, the body slams, all this stuff that's his usual offense, just over and over and over again. And you're right, I don't want to say hometown because I believe Ali is from Michigan. I believe.
Yeah, right.
At least that's where he's built from, but he's a Muslim and all that stuff. And so they felt like, well, we got to play up to the crowd, right? Well, the best way to play up, this crowd was hot. This crowd was a hot crowd. Can you put it in your head that if you have Gunther do what we just said to do, can you get the heat that Gunther would be getting from this crowd in Saudi Arabia? Basically a hometown boy.
Yep.
Getting his ass whooped, you know.
Mike, the way I would have booked this is very simple. I would have said Gunther has to come out there and be shocked and a little perturbed at the reaction Ali got. And while he's kind of bickering with the audience and not really being, you know, too attentive to Ali, Ali gets the first minute and a half of offense where he's making Gunther look completely silly and rolls him up for like a 2 9/10 count. And then Gunther just goes berserk. And once he gets him, he just will not pin him. 1-2, pick him up. 1-2, pick him up. And now, because he's been embarrassed a little bit at the beginning because of his own distractions, he just destroys Ali. And when Ali leaves that arena on a stretcher, there's major heat. Major heat. I don't know why you have Ali almost win. I just don't. We watched Ali get crushed by lesser people on Raw, right? I don't know. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, Tom. I mean, it was a good match, but, again, the booking's just weird.
I didn't hate it, but as you said before, as I was writing it, too, in the chat room, you know, Ali definitely should have taken one for the team. This is where Gunther gets super, you know, as we call white heat. and he just, you know, just lambasted Ali, the quote-unquote hometown boy, that crowd would have been unglued. And that's one of the things I love about big events like this, is that when you hook that crowd over something emotional like that, you know you got them. Just even
exactly, and that's why it's so important. I mean, Gunther has a big future here. They're talking about possibly getting him involved in the title picture. I mean, a main title picture. So this is where you get that heat where people just say, I am so freaking tired of this guy. Can you please put him in the ring with someone who can handle his ass? And that way, that's heat. That's what you want. You want the crowd to anticipate, uh-oh, he's going to fight so-and-so. That's what you want. You want it to be to the point where people are just like, anybody that can kick his ass, please. That way, when you say, well, Gunther's going to take on, I don't know, Brock Lesnar, you'll be, oh, well, he's not walking over to Brock Lesnar. So, oh, good, we want to see that because he's going to get his ass beat. That's what wrestling is. But if he can barely beat Ali, see, this is why you don't do that. I know you want to make it a feel-good moment. I know you want to give Ali his due. But there are times when you have to take one for the team because we have something major happening with this character. And this character is extraordinarily important, and this character should have dusted Ali. And you know how I know the WWE knows that that's the truth? Because they did it with Rhea Ripley. Did Natty put up a huge fight? Did she almost win? Natty's a veteran. Natty's held titles. Did she almost beat Rhea Ripley 20 times? No. Why? Because we're trying to establish that Rhea Ripley is just completely dominant. Oh, but you didn't do that with Gunther? See where I'm going with this? I don't know, Todd. This was one, in my opinion, that they should have had Ali take one for the team.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I would have Ali just – that should have been a squash match from the get-go, from the beginning of that match and to the end, and have Gunther just squash him and dust him like it was nothing. But, no, they gave him plenty of offense.
If you want to give him that first minute where he's embarrassed because he wasn't paying much attention and not taking him seriously, okay. But then that's it. There should be no more. So while it was a fine match, again, the booking just makes me, I don't know, makes me wonder what the hell's going on. And it doesn't make me that anxious for the next Gunther match where I want to be. I want to be that guy who says, Jesus, can you put somebody in the ring that can kick his ass already? Instead of, well, he almost got his ass kicked by Ali. So my assumption is if he fights Dolph Ziggler, Ziggler can do the same thing. Right? Oh, no, that can't be. Well, why? See, that's why I don't care for that. I didn't care for it when they let Zelina Vega do that with Rhea Ripley either. But they do that a lot. Anyway, Bianca Belair against Asuka. And I got to tell you, folks, the crowd was dead for this. Bianca Belair has a major problem. We had picked this out when she first arrived in the WWE. And everyone told us we were nuts. We said the major problem with Bianca Belair is she's not likable. She comes off as arrogant, flippant, dismissive of good talent, and just plain egotistical. She's a heel for the most part, and you're trying to make her a face. Now, she got better. She did get better, but at the same time, her mannerisms and her actions sometimes still make her feel very heelish. And she hasn't overcome it completely. And the fans are starting to turn on her. We saw in Puerto Rico, they booed her. Saudi Arabia, they couldn't care less. They were all for Asuka. And I think even though I don't think it's an outrageous statement to say she's probably the best athlete, women's athlete in the WWE. She may be better than Ronda Rousey as far as her body control and the things she can do. She may not be tougher, but her athleticism, I think, is higher. She's not getting over. And the reason she's not getting over is she's just not that likable. Now, you put Asuka, who was as likable as could be when she was the old Asuka, you couldn't get any more likable than her. She was exuberant. She looked like she was having a good time. She was always expressive and happy and energetic and got the crowd into it. And you said, no, you're not doing that anymore. We're making you this dark, mysterious, evil character who spits the green mist and laughs at other people's anguish. And you won't be that happy-go-lucky, you know, smiling, energetic Asuka anymore. And they still cheered for her. Because the crowd reminds me sometimes of a pet. You ever have a dog and a dog will just instinctively not like somebody? And you're like, well, there's nothing wrong with that person. But for some reason, they just don't like them. They get a bad vibe from them somehow. And yet other people, they'll be like, never saw that person, and I'm still getting up on their lap and licking their face because they get a good vibe. The crowd gets a good vibe from Asuka. The crowd gets a vibe that Asuka loves wrestling, and she's really into it, and she loves what she does. Besides that, really smart fans, the majority of which listen to this show, I should add, really smart fans understand very clearly Asuka is owed this. Asuka was a workhorse during the pandemic. She missed zero time. She was there every week, sometimes pulling double duty. Never complained. Stayed here in America, had to, couldn't go back to Japan and then come back. And did a yeoman's job at anything the WWE wanted her to do. Anything the WWE wanted her to do, she did. And if that's not earning the championship, I don't know what is. They let Bianca Belair set the record. And now they realize the crowd is just not going to get behind her. They didn't get behind her in Puerto Rico. They're not getting behind her here. And I think they made the right call. If I were the WWE, I would turn Bianca. She's going to have to wait because you can't turn her right now. Who are you going to turn her on, Asuka? Well, Asuka cheated to win. So the crowd's really not going to accept that Bianca Belair is all of a sudden healing Asuka's face, so that's not going to work. But eventually, after this Asuka feud is over, I think you have to turn her. Now, there's a second reason that they let Asuka have this, and I guess we should have all saw this coming. And that is, there's no more heels for Bianca Belair to beat. She's beaten them all. So unless you want to rehash a feud, you're going to have to let somebody who's a heel win the belt so that we can have some faces go for the belt. That's what they did. But they picked the right person. It would have been very easy to pick somebody else and overlook Asuka. Asuka's been overlooked time and time and time and time again. And I'm going to tell you, more than any other match yesterday afternoon, the response I got when Asuka won was overwhelming. I would say 99.5% of the texts and emails and whatever I got was, oh, yes, Asuka won. Isn't that awesome? So the WWE made the right move here. There's no question about it. Whether it's her unlikability, Asuka's likability, the fact that she's earned it, maybe all these things together, I don't know what it is. But I know that out of everything that happened, and more important things happened on this pay-per-view, let's be honest, this was the one that the crowd, or at least the fan base, seemed the most supportive of, Mike. They absolutely loved the idea of Asuka winning.
Yeah, even with the ending, they cheer. You know, and you know what else this does? This sets up, after Becky moves on from what she's doing with Trish, this sets up the eventual Becky Lynch Asuka that we've been hollering that we want to see. This we want that match, and we want one of those two women to have the belt for that match to mean something. You know, that's what this sets up. So this is a good bit of booking here.
Yeah, I thought this was one of their better bits of booking. Now, it wasn't one of their better matches. I don't think it was better even than their last match. It was pretty much the same. It wasn't an outstanding match, but the booking in this match was in my opinion, it was
psychology is definitely important, and it wasn't better than the WrestleMania match. You're right there; it's basically the same. And I was not shocked that Asuka won. I'm usually from the school of thought that WWE doesn't usually switch major titles at an event overseas, because they usually don't. But this was not a surprise to me. It was not a surprise. I think they went with the right person, and rightfully so, because let's be honest, Asuka does deserve it. And 100% I agree with you with Bianca having that heel sort of feel with her attitude and her conceitedness and overconfident. You know, there's confidence and then there's just, you know, pompous and conceited. And she just comes off to me like she's conceited and she could beat anybody. I mean, she does call herself the EST, but, you know, she got her ass handed to her by Asuka.
You know what the problem here is that fans now have become too smart. And by that I mean fans, back in the day, fans didn't know anything wrestlers did outside the ring. Now they have access to their Twitch accounts and their YouTube channels and their Instagrams and their Twitters. And they have group chats with fans. And, you know, Asuka started that Kana-chan channel where you can clearly see how much she loves wrestling and that she's such a nice person and a very happy, you know, exuberant person. It's very hard to boo somebody like that because what you're seeing is the real them. So then you say, well, they're playing a character, but I still like them. It's like going to a movie and you say, well, I like this actor. And in this movie, this actor is playing a heel or playing a bad guy, but I still like this actor. Well, that's kind of what's happening to pro wrestling now. Before, you would believe that Asuka's a no-good whatever, right? Cheater, wretch, America-hating whatever. You would have believed it. Today, you have too much access to Asuka, and you're watching her playing the video games and doing her drawings and going out and eating and doing all this stuff, and you're like, no, I like Asuka. Whereas Bianca Belair didn't have any of that. Bianca Belair doesn't have those channels with the fans where she says, I'm not really conceited. I'm not really thinking I'm the EST, and here I am doing this and that and the other thing. You know, she doesn't do that. So Asuka gets the advantage on that. Wrestling is going to have to change a little bit. Wrestling is going to have to go more toward, like, allowing you to be sort of yourself to a degree, because if you're going to do that on Twitch and you're going to do it on Instagram and YouTube, fans are going to find that. And you're either going to have to tell them you can't do it if you want to not break kayfabe, or you're going to have to go with their real personality. I thought they were doing that with Asuka. I figured they're just going to go with their real personality, which was more entertaining than this one. But no, they didn't. But they did do the right thing, and they handed her the title, and she absolutely 100% deserves it, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about Asuka and everything. And this is a wrestler... A female superstar who loves the business and who this is a superstar who is having fun working with the fans. This is a person who just loves business and everything.
Yeah, and you know, Mike, they're never going to be able. I hope they can, because we want to see Becky Lynch versus us. But I don't think they're ever going to be able to live down that moment where Asuka really didn't know that Becky Lynch was pregnant. They said, we're not going to tell Asuka. We're going to tell Asuka that Becky Lynch is handing her the title. We're not going to tell her why. And then when Asuka found out and was so happy for her and they shared that moment, you're like, well, that's real. Fans aren't stupid. Fans knew that was real. And they got to see behind the curtain for a second. They got to see Becky Lynch's real emotional response, Asuka's real emotional response, and they said, I like Asuka. And when you let somebody have that glimpse, it's going to be very hard for people to say, oh, I know she's a bad guy now in this character, but I know the real Asuka. And again, it's like a movie actor where you say, oh, okay, he's playing a bad guy in this. I saw Jason Statham in a movie where he was, you know, the bad guy. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't matter. I like Jason Statham. And you don't take it as seriously because you know the rest of it. And it's going to be hard for them. Even if she goes against Becky Lynch, I think Asuka's going to have her fan base.
Yeah, that's going to be a match where probably it's going to be 50-50. You don't want it to be 50-50, but it's going to be 50-50 in that match, you know, because both of them two girls, I mean, they've already made the decision that Becky's going to be a face. They made that decision, which is the right decision, right?
Yeah.
So, because she's going to be a face and so is Seth and all that stuff. But Becky Lynch, I mean, this isn't the 90s whenever you had like Bull Nakano, you know, that we knew nothing about, and she could play the hero, she could play the villain, I mean, as a America, I don't want to say America-hating Japanese person, but, you know, she could be a heel Japanese person because we didn't know her real personality, and she could play that character, right? This isn't that.
Right.
I mean, look, I'm looking at, she's 41 years old right now. She's in great shape. She's much like, she's a 5 year younger or 6 year younger version of Trish Stratus. Trish Stratus is like 47 years old.
Right.
Asuka is like 41 or 42. So they could get another
3 or 4 years. Yeah, you know what it's like, Mike? It reminds me of when Ted DiBiase first came in as the Million Dollar Man. His gimmick was so irritating to most people because most people aren't rich. And his idea was, well, money talks and I can buy whatever I want. If I want the kids out of the pool, the kids get out of the pool. If I want this, if I have some kid bouncing a basketball and I don't want to pay him, I kick the basketball out. He seemed rotten to the core, right? And he was a very easy guy to dislike. He's a very easy guy to say, I can't wait for somebody to beat his ass. And then you met him, as I did up in the Poconos, and I said, wow. What a really nice guy. What a down-to-earth, nice guy. And then it's very hard because you say to yourself, I know the real guy. It's hard to root against him. I mean, you can do it. You can just say, I'm going to boo because I'm supposed to boo. But deep down inside, I hope he does well because he's a nice guy and he deserves it. Well, that's like Asuka. If I'm going to go see Asuka versus Becky Lynch, I can boo Asuka. But secretly, I hope she does very well because I know that she's a nice person. Once you reveal yourself like that, it's very hard. And that's why a lot of people are bitching about these guys going on Twitter saying, oh, you know, here I am with my buddies doing this. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. I thought you were a rotten SOB who hated everybody. And here you are at a comic convention yucking it up. Here you are with some guy you're feuding with. It makes it very hard for the thing because then it does become a movie. And people just like, oh, well, he's not really like that. So you can't really get too mad at him, you know, because you know they're not really like that. Sometimes they can know too much about your personal life. I mean, I remember watching clips. I was a little too young to remember firsthand Stan Hansen. But I watched clips of Stan Hansen, and I'm like, that guy's insane. That's just one big redneck cowboy SOB. And then, you know, years and years and years and years and years later, hearing him on shoot interviews and stuff, I'm like, oh, he's a cool guy. I'm glad I didn't know. Same with, like, you know, George Steele. You hear him in interviews, very articulate. But, man, you know, when you're a kid and you see that guy come running out of there going, hey, and you're like, oh, shit. You know, well, fans are too smart now. All the fans already know who you really are and what you're really like, and it's very difficult. Very difficult. And that's why the good guy, Bret Hart went through the same thing Bianca Belair is going through. Bret Hart was arrogant, rude to fans, thought he was the greatest thing to ever happen to professional wrestling, had a huge chip on his shoulder, and fans started booing him. Steve Austin was the heel who said to everybody, yeah, y'all can go, you know, kiss my ass, and I don't need any fans. But secretly, they knew Austin was digging the fact that the fans were cheering him, and they cheered him over Bret Hart. Because they knew the real Bret Hart wasn't the guy he was portraying in the ring. And they knew the real Stone Cold Steve Austin wasn't the guy he was portraying in the ring. So Bianca Belair is suffering from that Bret Hart syndrome a little bit. Now, to his credit, Bret Hart changed a lot over the years. and he became a lot less egotistical. But I'm firsthand going to tell you, and I'd say it to his face, that Bret Hart in his prime was nasty to most fans. And very, what's the right word for it? Even when he was nice, it was a phony nice. It was a a smile for the camera and then, you know, get lost. And I Bianca Belair may not be that way, but she comes across that way. And that's all it takes. And I think that's part of the reason that the fans are starting to turn on her. Same thing happened with Bret Hart. And what did they have to do to Bret Hart? They had to flip him. Now let's get to Rhea Ripley versus Natty. By the way, it was Natty's birthday. Happy birthday to Natty. She got her ass whipped. But this is why I'm telling you that the WWE knew what they had to do. Someone needs to tell me, why did you choose to have Rhea Ripley totally manhandle and destroy a veteran in Natty? Someone who's actually held the championship. Why did you do it? Those writers are going to tell me, because, Marcus, we are trying to tell a story, and that story is Rhea Ripley is dominant. Beyond anything you have ever seen in a wrestling ring, she is dominant female. And even seasoned veterans who have held championships, she's disposing of with ease. Okay, that's a good story to tell. Why didn't you tell that for Gunther and Mustafa Ali? Because it's the same story. That's my problem. You got this one right. This is exactly what probably should have happened. But it should have happened with Gunther, too. See what the crowd reaction was? There were people holding their head like, you got to be kidding. This match is over. She destroyed her just like that? Yeah, and that helps to get heat. So while this match was a nothing match, and I wouldn't want the Ali-Gunther match to be that short, I told you my plan for that match. The result should be the same. Basically a manhandling. And it would have been fine, Mike. Sorry it happened to Natty on her birthday, but Natty's smart enough to know she had to take one for the team, and she did.
Right. And look, this is she understands. She's been in the sport how many years now, Natty?
Quite a while.
I mean, she's been in the sport a long time. She was one of the last, you know, graduates of the dungeon, you know. So she understands mm-hmm. the sport, you know, and she knows how the sport should be, how this should have been written, and this should have been written the exact way it was written. And look, what's his name? Dom didn't need to be out there. He was out there, but he didn't need to be out there. And boy, I'll say it again, and I know you're going to say it too. He is over. Those people in Saudi Arabia obviously have watched the WWE product. They've obviously watched it, and they understand this guy is not to be liked, and he is to be hated to the max. And they understood that, and they did their job. The fans.
Absolutely, she did the right thing, and that's exactly what Mustafa Ali should have done. Make it a plan where he says, okay, then, you know, if I don't win, I'm leaving or whatever, then just make him come back as a different character in a bitter way or whatever it happens to be. Tell a story if you want to tell a story. But the main story is Gunther is so dominant, this is getting ridiculous. That's what it has to be. Just like Rhea Ripley is so dominant, this is getting ridiculous. It's what it needs to be. And as far as Dominic is concerned, listen, this kid has caught fire. He can thank his dad for it. Now, part of it is him, yes. But Rey Mysterio for a long time said, I really don't want Dominic to turn heel, and I don't want to fight him if he did. And that's not bullshit. That's true. He didn't really want to do it. Somehow they convinced him it's best for his son. Well, I think he realizes now it most certainly is, because his son is a star. And I had to laugh at some of the fans who were trying to tell me, oh, that's go-away heat. That is not go-away heat. That is real, honest, nuclear heat. Dominic Mysterio has a chance to be a top heel. He already is, really, but he has a chance to be a top heel. He already surpassed Finn Balor by leaps and bounds. he surpassed Damian Priest by leaps and bounds. Him and Rhea Ripley took over Judgment Day, almost from the start. And they've never looked back because they clearly understand where they're going with them and they're doing the right thing. And that's all that needs to be done. So, yeah, Tom, I mean, Natty got her ass kicked, but she understands the business. And like Mike said, this is no big deal for her. This is just the business.
You're both 100% correct about that. And I actually had to rewind it because I walked away from the TV to do something that would take me maybe about 3 or 4 minutes. When I came back, it was over. I was like,
yeah.
What happened? To build off Dominic, boy, does Dominic, when Dominic's turn first happened and he joined the Judgment Day, we all said on this show and otherwise that we hated it. It was a bad move. It was silly. It's going to make the Judgment Day look even more stupid than they look now. Oh, my goodness, were we wrong. And Dominic fighting Rey Mysterio, that crowd, that's the hottest angle next to the Bloodline. That is the greatest thing they got going next to the Bloodline. And to make Rhea so dominant that she, you know, dusts a veteran, again, you hook that audience. And to get their reaction on tape and close-up going, oh, my God, I can't believe what I just saw,
right,
putting their hands over their mouth like, oh, yep, my God. Like, that's so,
yeah, that's gold, and that's why the cameramen are right there. Now, I'll disagree with you on one thing. I think we were right. I think that they did ruin the Judgment Day. Judgment Day was destroyed by Dominic and Rhea because they became so much more important than Judgment Day that people said, to hell with Finn Balor and Damian Priest. We don't care. That was supposed to be Balor and Priest's deal, with Rhea and Dominic being the sidekicks. And I think what they had in mind was, well, Rhea will be the female member, and Dominic will be the one that always gets beat so that we don't have to be the guy that gets beat. Well, Finn Balor didn't lose that match. Dominic did. Well, Damian Priest didn't lose that match. Dominic did. And then they realized, well, no, this ain't happening. He's got nuclear heat. And Rey Mysterio helped it out so much. See, the thing is, Rey may not be the greatest guy in the microphone, but he was very believable. I mean, it is his son, and he was very believable, and he's so beloved that the fans really took it personally when Dominic was saying those things about Rey. It wasn't like a character in a movie. It was like, that's his son, and that's bullshit. When you can get that kind of emotion, I think I told this story once before, that in our federation, there was a guy whose mom used to come to the matches. And another one of the wrestlers, who was one of my good friends, had to turn on me. And I was supposedly carried out on a stretcher. And that woman said to me, well, I'll never speak to him again. And I said, what are you talking about? Your son's involved in this. You know we're friends, right? I don't care. He shouldn't have done it. Even if it's part of the script, he shouldn't have done it. That's beyond. Boy, when you can get that kind of heat, and that's sort of what Dominic has. People are like, yeah, I know he's kidding, but he still shouldn't do it. He's a punk. You can't beat that with a stick. I truly think that we might be looking down the barrel at Dominic Mysterio winning Money in the Bank, Todd, because he would be maybe the most annoying person to ever hold Money in the Bank.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I remember the one time when the Miz won Money in the Bank, and he got tons of heat. And this reminds me of that, being annoying.
Yeah, the Miz was annoying enough. Mike, can you imagine the heat Dominic Mysterio gets if he wins Money in the Bank?
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Think about it. And look, when's the Money in the Bank?
Coming right up, next pay-per-view, right?
Next pay-per-view. So, and he doesn't have to cash it in. I mean, this is...
Oh,
this
no.
No, he doesn't have to cash it in. You could have him saying all this stuff, and then this could be a way to get him ready to possibly at some point face Seth Rollins.
Absolutely. I mean, him holding that with Rhea Ripley with him, where you're saying to yourself, well, she could also help. He could actually get a hold of this title with her help. I think, you know, I was all for LA Knight winning it. But now that I'm thinking of it, it would be very difficult to talk me out of having Dominic win that. Because he would have so much heat. And he would be so good as the punk carrying the briefcase. You never know where he's going to cash in. You never know when Rhea's going to help him, which is totally unfair. He's also got the other Judgment Day guys there. It's going to be very difficult to stop him. Major chip on his shoulder, always coming down, threatening to cash it in, but never cashing it in, waiting for that moment where the guy's basically almost dead before he will, which makes him even more of a coward. I think that's written for him. I would definitely think about giving Dominic Mysterio the Money in the Bank briefcase, Tom.
Man, would that be so great. And that's another thing that you can extend it even have it come down to, you know, Finn and Damian Priest in Money in the Bank as well. And Dominic say, you know what, it's every man for himself, screw it. And cost one of the, you know, kind of cause a rift in the group. And man, would that be cool? Because like
they should separate
to...
anyway. To be honest, they're not a functioning unit. They don't come out together anymore. Mostly, Todd, I'd be all for Dominic winning Money in the Bank. I think he'd be great as the guy holding it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I think he would be great too. And he could. There's a lot of things you could do with Dominic. Do like a little tease, but no, you don't deserve maybe cashing it in or anything, or do you like. Be like that stuck appeal too.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine him going in when a guy is just literally hurt and like kicking him a couple times to make sure he's moving a little bit, and then being like, no, he's moving still. I'm not cashing it in tonight. He'll be like, Jesus Christ, what are you waiting for? Does the guy literally have to be completely unconscious? I mean, the heat he could get would be unreal. I think it would be an excellent move. Anyway, let's get to Brock Lesnar versus Cody Rhodes. I've always said the good thing about Brock Lesnar is something he really can't control, and that is Brock Lesnar is so pale-skinned and exerts so much energy when he wrestles. He turns red like a lobster. Brock Lesnar looks like he has been through a war after like 5 minutes. And I'm sure he has more cardio than that, and I'm sure he can go longer if he wants to. But his complexion and just the way he is, he turns beet red and sweats like he is in the desert, which technically he is, but I'm sure that building had some air conditioning. And he just makes it look – you can say what you want about Brock Lesnar. But the one thing I will tell you that's great about Brock Lesnar is – it never looks phony to me. It always looks like he's really trying to bust your ass. Oh, and that's what wrestling's supposed to be. No, he's not doing ricochet high-flying stuff and super planchas. He just looks like he's really busting your ass. And that's good enough for me because it's very easy for me to suspend my disbelief. Now, I did think Cody Rhodes coming down and having them saying his arm is broken, but the doctors have fitted it with a titanium who is he? Captain America? Got a titanium shield now? I've never heard of such a thing. You got a titanium cast on your arm? Well, that's a pretty damn unfair advantage. You hit somebody in the head with a titanium steel cast, I would imagine, even if your name is Brock Lesnar, you're going out for the 3 count. But he did, and Brock didn't, and I don't know if it's a little silly, but it was okay. Cody Rhodes was never going to give up. We know Cody Rhodes wasn't going to give up. Should Cody Rhodes have tapped out? No. No. Cody Rhodes has established himself as someone who would rather pass out and rather just succumb to the pain than to tap out and say, I quit. So I'm perfectly fine with the way the match ended. The titanium thing, like I said, I don't get it. A turnbuckle knocks Brock Lesnar loopy and he wins, but titanium steel doesn't. Okay. But either way, Cody Rhodes losing is the right move. You can't have Cody Rhodes go in injured and beat Brock Lesnar. That would literally just throw Brock Lesnar completely under the bus to the point if you can't beat a one-armed Cody Rhodes, then we no longer fear you. At least what Brock Lesnar did in this match, you're still like, geez, man. Yeah, he damn near killed Cody Rhodes. And also, give credit to Brock Lesnar for one thing. Brock is a better professional wrestler than people think. Listen, is he lazy? Yeah. Yeah, he is. If he can get away with doing a three-minute match, he'd do a three-minute match all day long. But when he really wants to, Brock Lesnar's way better a professional wrestler than people think. There were times when Brock Lesnar's facial expression was, how tough is this guy? How come I can't put him away? Even when Brock Lesnar won and Cody wouldn't give up, he kept looking back at him like, I almost want to go in and shake his hand, but screw him. He has that ability. He almost sold Cody Rhodes even in victory. He sold Cody Rhodes. And there's a lot of professional wrestlers who've been around a long time who can't do that. So I do want to give a little credit to Brock Lesnar in that. He definitely sold Cody Rhodes. People say, oh, he kind of manhandled Cody. Yeah, but believe me, with his body language, his facial expressions and everything, he sold Cody Rhodes. He kept screaming to Cody Rhodes, tap out, tap out. He wouldn't. And then when Brock's in the corner, red as a lobster, he's just looking at Cody Rhodes, who passed out, going, damn, you know, took a lot to beat that guy, even one-armed. That's the way you sell somebody, even in victory, Mike, and I think Brock Lesnar deserves credit for that. I really do.
Look, you're right about it, and you're right about the fact that if he doesn't want to face you, you're not going to get it. You're not gonna face him. See Jinder Mahal, right? But
right.
This is a guy that has the same type of, I don't want to say problem, the same type of thing that Sheamus does. That a lot of the Irish, I mean, you're an Irish guy. You have that pale skin. You have that.
You have
that coloration thing where if somebody hits you, you automatically have a welt that people can see,
yep.
Right? That's what Brock Lesnar has. He has that thing, and, I mean, that would be a fun match between him and Gunther because, you know, Gunther works stiff, and Gunther's going to hit Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar's going to feel it, you know, and that's the thing. But this is, you're right. He looked back as if to say, what the hell do I have to do with this guy to beat this guy, you know, And he passed out. He didn't give up. He passed out, and that's the thing. And you're right about the titanium thing. Over the past several decades, there have been many people that have had plates in their arms. Luger had a plate put in his arm. Bob Orton Sr. wore a cast for how long?
Right, forever. Yeah.
Forever. And then, of course, Dr. Death Steve Williams had that arm brace.
So part of the match was a little whatever, but you got to give credit to Brock Lesnar. He really did. Even as he's walking up the aisle, you got to watch the matches very carefully, which I do. And even when he's walking up the aisle, he kept looking back. And even though he was kind of like laughing, like I won, he's looking at Cody like, that's a lot tougher SOB than I thought. And, you know, he put me through hell, and he looked like he put him through hell. So give credit to Lesnar for that, Tom. He did a really good job.
Yes, 100%. And this is one of the things that I never liked about Brock Lesnar is that he was kind of like, at the time, like underselling a lot. Last night he proved me wrong because he had that look on his face like, yeah, I won, but I had to pull out. I had to pull out all the stops to do so. And it's crazy for crying out loud. And he really sold it. He did a good job of doing so too. So it was, not only was it believable that he's been through a war after a few minutes, cause he's, you know, Brock Lobster, but it was Cody Rhodes. And then he sold it on his way back down the aisle, which was like, okay, I get it. Now, is it like, is he, you know, he's not a beast. He actually is human.
Yeah, well, listen, this is all you can ask. If you're going to lose to Brock Lesnar, at least if Brock Lesnar acknowledges somehow that it's like, man, I was through the war. And that's what Brock Lesnar did last night. Watch it again. Brock Lesnar's laying in the corner after the match, sweating, beat red, looking at Cody Rhodes like, okay, he was way tougher than I thought. Almost giving him that look of, well, now I respect him. Didn't respect him before. Maybe I do now. That's good. Brock Lesnar will do that, but only with people he likes. He didn't do that with a couple of people, actually, that he fought. He doesn't do it with Goldberg. He never liked Goldberg, so he didn't do that much with Goldberg. He'll lose to Goldberg, but he's not gonna really put him over much. Obviously, Moxley, he didn't care for, and he didn't put Moxley over at all. Undertaker, he obviously did. Roman Reigns, he obviously did. So, I mean, he will do it. It's just he has to have that respect for you, I think. He's not one of those guys who's just like, well, I'll do whatever you want with whoever you want me to do it with. He's not going to do that. So if he likes you, he can do that. So my assumption is he likes Cody Rhodes because he certainly made him look good. Even in a loss, he made him look good. Good match and a longer match than I thought it was going to be, Todd.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, that match last night yesterday with Lesnar and Rhodes there, you know, it's at least now you see the respect Lesnar gave to Cody yesterday, and after the match was over, he gave him like a nod, like, he got my respect.
Yeah, he's going back looking almost like, Jesus, you know, I didn't have any idea that guy was going to be that tough. Lesnar did not need to do that. So, and Cody, look, Cody did himself a favor too. Because a lot of people said Cody should have won by hook or crook. No, because then it makes Cody look like, oh, I'm Superman. This made Cody look very, not beatable, but very, what's the right word? It made him look like he can be beaten. He's great, but he's vulnerable at times. He's not going to be handed everything. He's going to have to work for it, and I think that probably did him a big favor. He seems a lot more likable now. You know, before when I'm Cody Rhodes and I'm doing this, and I'm going to beat everybody. I beat Seth Rollins. I beat Seth Rollins again. I'll beat Seth Rollins again. I beat Brock Lesnar. I got number 30 at the Royal Rumble, and you're like, Jesus Christ already. You're Cody Rhodes, for God's sake. You're not Superman. Well, last night was the first time that you're like, okay, now we can get back to the story of Cody working his way up. Anyway, let's get to the main event, folks. Let's get to the main event because even though I still say this should not have been the main event, this was an awesome match. I'm going to tell you something. It doesn't happen to me too much. I don't like Sami Zayn. And then as a wrestler, I like him. I think he's fantastic on the mic. I think he's very good in the ring. I think he's politically insane. And I've seen him be nasty to people who he has no reason to be nasty to. Having said that, watching Sami Zayn walk out there in that garb and getting that kind of reaction was a moment where I really said to myself, if wrestling has ever accomplished anything above just giving people entertainment, it might be this. Because this has showed the entire world that not one single person in that audience gave one single damn what religion Sami Zayn is. So while their government was saying, you can't come in, you're the enemy, you're this, that, and the other thing, the people never felt that way. The people loved Sami Zayn. There were Sami Zayn signs all over the place. He got a gigantic reaction. Gigantic reaction. And it was a moment. I mean, I really was, I was taken aback for a moment. And I just said, wow, this transcends wrestling. This is different. This is a moment. And it's not just a wrestling moment. This is a moment. is a moment that everybody can clearly see that when you're an athlete or you're a fan of a particular athlete or a musical performer or an actor or an entertainer of any kind, nobody gives one damn what your religion is or your sexuality is or your ideology is, and we can all learn a lesson from that. Crowd was hot for Sami Zayn. And I'll tell you this, I saw some guys who are obviously bigwigs sitting front row in their turbans and their whatevers who did not look happy about it. But there's nothing they can do when that whole crowd was chanting Sami Zayn. So, yeah, that's a moment. Anyway, leave it to the WWE, however. Why do you have to constantly screw with something that's so goddamn good? First off, let's get to this. I don't want to see Solo pinned. I want to see Roman pinned, and there was no reason on earth that Sami Zayn couldn't have pinned him using the same scenario that you used with Solo. Give Sami Zayn that moment. He deserved it. He earned it. He should have had it. Number two, why is Jimmy Uso the guy who's doing this? Jey Uso should be the guy. Jimmy, up until a couple of weeks ago, was trying to get Jey back on the don't let them talk, you know, don't let them talk bad about Roman. They're just trying to poison your mind, Jey, with Jey saying, what happens if Sammy's right? What happens if Sammy's telling the truth here, Jimmy? Maybe we are being, no, don't listen to them. This was Jey's moment to do that. This was all that big buildup of everything that Roman put Jey through from the beginning. This was Jey's moment, and he gave it to Jimmy. And I don't get it. I know you're trying to say, well, Jey is so brainwashed that even though he knows he's being abused, he's still trying to cling to Roman. No, that's a terrible story. The story should have been that Jey from the beginning said, I knew we were being led astray. Everything I did, including coming back to Roman and groveling at his feet, I did so you wouldn't be punished because you're my brother. But I've had enough of it. That's the story. You fucked it up. And I don't know how you can fuck it up because it's the easiest goddamn story that you've ever told. But you screwed it up. And it was not as satisfactory as it should have been because it should have been Jey. And it should have been Roman pinned. And the way it should have been Roman pinned is they should have missed and hit Solo and said, shit, we missed Solo. Then Roman gets in the ring and starts berating Jimmy for doing it, and Jey should have knocked him out with a super kick, walked away. Sami Zayn gets the pin, and that's it. There's your story. Writes itself. I don't know where you're going with this. I've only seen this once before in my whole life, and it wasn't in wrestling. It was actually in a series called Iron Fist on Netflix. And for the whole entire series, the idea was, when is Iron Fist going to fight this main bad guy? And instead, the girl he's hanging around with fights him. And I'm like, I've wasted my whole entire time waiting for this fight. It's not going to happen. The second banana is going to fight him? Why? That's not what I want to see. You go to Jason Statham movie, and Jason Statham's partner kicks the hell out of the main bad guy, and Statham just, you beat him? Okay, I guess I don't have to fight him. I don't like it. I know there's more coming with Jey. I get it. But this was Jey's moment. So Jey could have said to Jimmy, from the very beginning when I first turned on Sami Zayn, I did it for you. Because Roman said he was going to punish you if I didn't come back, remember? I didn't want to turn on Sami, and I told you I didn't, and I told Sami I didn't. And I told you I thought Sami was right. And I was hoping you'd see it. But when he pushed you on SmackDown, I realize this is too far gone now, and I've had enough, and it should just be us. We're brothers. That's the moment. Not Jimmy, who a week ago was telling Jey to calm down. That does not make a ton of sense. And I think it kills Jay's momentum because Jey was the one who went through this whole storyline being in doubt. And Mike, this was his moment, and they took it away.
Yeah, this was a mistake. This was that moment. They took it away. But just one thing on the whole Sami Zayn thing. And you saw those guys with the turbans in the audience, right? This was the completion of what happened. What was it, last year? When Sami wasn't there, but crowd was chanting his name, right? They wanted Sami Zayn. And that probably didn't make those higher ups in Saudi Arabia happy. When the crowd did that. It wasn't the WWE that did that. It was the crowd in Saudi Arabia. And so this was a completion of that. And you could tell those guys within the turbans were not happy. You could see the look on their faces.
Yep. Sure could. It was a moment. It was a real moment. And you could see the look on Sami Zayn's face. It was very emotional. This was a big deal. This is a bigger deal than people think. Because there was a clear message sent, and that clear message is the majority of people. Sometimes we say, oh, China's our enemy, Russia's our enemy, but it's not the people for the most part. It's the government. And when you talk to the people, they're no different than you or I. Well, we just saw that. Nobody turned their back on Sami Zayn and said, well, we don't care if they allowed him in here. We disagree with his ideologies, and we're turning our back on him. No, nobody did that. He got a huge, gigantic, colossal ovation. That's a real moment, Tom.
100%. And while I disagree with Sami Zayn's politics, I also think he's politically insane, and he's been rude to fans, and he's not a very – you know, nice person outside the ring. Those fans gave him, I would say, the pop of the night. I would dare say even more of a pop than he got when they were in Canada.
Oh, yes.
Two very different crowds, but it was, like you said, it was a moment for not only for Sami Zayn, which, look, I may not like him personally, but he brought that bloodline angle to where it was. And he deserved that. He deserved not only the the push that he got, but and everything that he's being given now, but he deserved that moment with those fans, because those fans took it all in and they blew the roof off that place. That was by far, and this is even before the match started. That was my favorite part of the whole match.
There's no doubt, but I mean, wouldn't it have this been much more special if after Roman shoved Jimmy, Jay super kicked him on purpose, did it the second time, walked away. When Roman Reigns is struggling to get to his feet, Sami Zayn hits him with a huluva kick and gets a 3 count on Roman Reigns so people can say Sami Zayn actually pinned Roman. Title, it's not up. And he didn't exactly lose clean if that happens. That's a moment. That's a moment that you say, oh, shit. Wow. You know, they didn't do that, Mike, and I don't know how you missed that opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know how you missed that opportunity either, and that's the thing. I mean, you could have still had, you know, Soto being undefeated. This is – you don't want his first defeat to be in a tag team match. Right?
I know what you mean. Yeah,
right.
Cody beat him once before, but you don't want that. And the thing is, Roman could be twice as furious now, Mike, because he could say, you totally humiliated me, and I lost to that idiot Sami Zayn. Thanks to you. It would have made it Roman even more furious, I would think, right?
Absolutely. And it would have been him getting a pin with help over Sam – over Roman. But again, think about it this way. What would people be saying? Yeah, he had help, but he got the pin.
Right.
And, you know, then maybe you could maybe make a point of him maybe going on a run after, you know, after they have him and Kevin Owens drop those titles, probably back to the Usos at some point. But anyway, drop those titles. Maybe you can then, with that help, you could have him maybe go on a run for that other title, or maybe even that Universal title, or even Intercontinental U.S. title, you know?
The one thing I do know is this. Some people just, you've earned your moment, and you should be given it. Asuka earned her moment, and she was given it. Sami Zayn earned a pin over Roman Reigns in this situation where it would not hurt Roman Reigns. And Jey Uso earned the right to be the one to make the first move against Roman. Both of those guys earned that, and neither one got it. And I don't like it. Having said that, it was an excellent match. And the crowd was totally into it. And this event, just based upon the match quality, was fantastic. I loved it. But in typical WWE fashion, some of the booking makes me go, why? Why, when you had everything in order, do you have to reinvent the wheel? Just let it be. I don't want to come out of Night of Champions thinking less of Gunther. I don't want to come out of Night of Champions thinking, well, why is Jay such a pussy? It was Jay who was really getting the abuse, not Jimmy. Jimmy put up with zero of it. Jay's put up with it for I don't know how long. Why? Why Solo being pinned instead of Roman when Sammy earned the right to pin Roman so that we have that nice little neat bundle wrapped up? Sammy, you have to lose to Roman at WrestleMania, but don't worry, your moment's coming. You're not going to win the title, but there's going to be a time when you pin Roman and get your ultimate ha-ha, I pinned you moment. There it is. And if you wanted Roman to be furious at the Usos, he'd be even more furious if he's the one that lost. Right? Story writes itself, and I don't understand how you miss that. Because that's aggravating. Also, here's what you better do. If you've got any plans, and I hope you do, to have Gunther go against Brock Lesnar, which is basically a here-take-my-money moment, because if that's going to happen, I'm definitely want to be there. I'm definitely watching. You got to turn Brock back to being a face, and there's only one way to do it. And that way is to say, everybody's asking me why I attacked Cody Rhodes. Everybody's asking me why I picked on Cody Rhodes. Everybody's asking me why, you know, I targeted him when he did nothing. He said to ask me to be his partner. I asked to be his partner. And the answer is this. I know Cody Rhodes, and I know how tough Cody Rhodes is, and I knew his dad. I know how tough his dad is. But Cody Rhodes didn't mean enough. Cody Rhodes needed to be put through hell. Cody Rhodes needed a lesson. And I gave it to him. And now this new Cody Rhodes that you're going to see, he's going to be a much, much tougher, much, much meaner, and much, much harder to beat guy. And he can thank Brock Lesnar for it, because that's why I did it. Then people would say, well, that kind of makes sense. Lesnar could say he'd be the champion right now. He would have beat Roman if he was this new Cody Rhodes with this different attitude. But somebody had to beat sense into him. Somebody had to beat this into him that you can't be a nice guy all the time, and I did it. And now we'll see where he goes, because then people would say, well, that kind of makes sense. And, okay, maybe he did do it for Cody's own good. Maybe Brock's not such a bad guy. And then you want to put Gunther in the mix with Gunther saying, eh, there's nobody in America that could ever hold a candlestick to me, and then Brock Lesnar comes out and gets in his face. You're going to sell a lot of tickets. Because you got me, I'll tell you. So you're going to sell a lot of tickets to that one, Mike. I think that would be a good way to handle it.
I think that would be a good, I mean, if not, if that's exactly what should happen tomorrow night on Raw, or maybe, well, I don't know. I guess Brock can be on both shows, you know.
Yeah.
But that should be exactly what happens tomorrow night on Raw. You know, give Brock the time and exactly what you just said. But exactly what you just said.
Can you imagine that moment where Brock Lesnar says, look, I've been in the ring with The Undertaker, Randy Orton, Roman Reigns, everybody. AJ Styles. Cody Rhodes is the toughest person I've been in the ring with. but he's too nice for this business. And he needed somebody to toughen him up and smarten him up. And that's what I did. And you may not like the way I did it, but in the long run, this is going to make a much better Cody Rhodes. I think the fans would buy that. Cody could come out and say, there's probably better ways to do it than break my arm. But message received. And maybe you could work that into even Cody going against Gunther and maybe doing something, and then Brock Lesnar going against Gunther for form of revenge or whatever. There's things you could do, Tom.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This would have been Cody and Brock was definitely the story behind that was really good. They did a good job. They both did a good job. But if you're going to, you know, what's next for Lesnar is if it's Gunther, then you really got to keep going with, you know, the Brock being, I don't know if the right words for it is humble, but, you know, because he
doesn't have to be a face, but he has to at least be likable. And the only way he's going to be likable after what he did to Cody Rhodes is to say, I did it for his own good. And if you watch that match, you see me walking out of that match, looking back at Cody Rhodes, thinking, that's one tough son of a bitch, and I just made him that much tougher. Anyway, rating this pay-per-view, if I take the booking completely out of this, some of the booking I agreed with, but if I take the booking completely out of it, this is pretty close to an A+. There was not one bad match. Everything that needed to happen happened to a certain extent. I don't like some of the booking, so because of that, I'm going to knock it down to an A-, but this was a very, very strong pay-per-view, in my opinion, Mike.
Right, as a very strong pay-per-view, I got to give it an A- as well. And on that Brock Lesnar thing, you know, you could have Brock Lesnar face Gunther, and then Gunther start to run down Cody Rhodes, and Brock Lesnar say, "Hold on, Kemosabe, this guy's too tough. I had to teach him a lesson." You know, I went against many a nice guy in MMA, and those nice guys always finished last. I had to teach them lessons too. You know.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It writes itself if you want it to get to Gunther and Brock. So let's see if they're smart enough to get that underway. Todd, what's your rating on Night of Champions?
I'm going to give it the same grade, an A- as well. You know, like we said before about Brock Lesnar and Cody, he gave that nod last night.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening with that. Very strong pay-per-view, Tom. What's your rating?
I liked all of it. Nothing wrong with the actual wrestling. Some of the booking was a little weird and off, especially in the last match. But the thing that I'm going to give it an A, because what really did it for me was a non-wrestling moment, and that was the ovation from the Saudi people to Sami Zayn. It was absolutely amazing. And for that, I bring it up a notch to an A.
And you know what? Maybe Sami Zayn has also learned a lesson, and it's not the whole country. It's not the whole country that hates you. Sometimes it's just the government. The people are the people. So that was a moment. Really good job, WWE. I mean, you know, again, I disagree with some of the booking. I think some of this booking would have been better done the way we said, but at the end of the day, it was very entertaining. So what can I say except, you know, good job, hats off to you, and have a happy Memorial Day, everybody.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.